Welcome to the Inside Slant Podcast, brought to you by JayhawkSlant.com, bringing you the latest in KU recruiting news, team coverage, and all of the information you need. Here is the staff from Jayhawk Slant.
Hey everybody, this is Randy Withers, and I am jacked up to finally be back in the Jayhawk Slant studio. All of us have dusted off the mics and tested our equipment, and we are ready to roll with the first Inside Slant podcast of the summer. I sound like a broken record here, I know, but we have talked as a group about recording Slant podcasts more often, and that is our plan moving forward. I want to take a moment to thank every one of you who have listened over the years and say that we definitely appreciate your support. Now, this is crazy. I've got some really wild numbers here. In the last year, we have had over 100,000 downloads from 9 different countries. Let me say that again. 100,000 downloads of the Jayhawk Slant Inside Slant podcast from 9 different countries around the world. Jayhawk Nation has spoken loud and clear, and we've listened. We promise to deliver more of the best podcast available anywhere for KU fans. After what's been a busy few weeks for football and men's basketball, we're going to hit the ground running. We've got a lot to talk about, from a wild and crazy weekend in football recruiting to a big positive turn for Bill Self and the Jayhawks on the hardwood. Let's get right into it and welcome in our two Jayhawk Slant analysts, John Kirby and Shay Wildebor. Boys, how y'all doing this morning?
What's up, gentlemen?
I'm doing well, Randy. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Shay, it's been a minute since I've had a chance to check in with you. Everything good?
Everything's good, man. Here's what we need to do. We need to get old Curb Dog to get us a studio, baby. We got all those downloads from 9 different countries. We need a studio, Curb Dog.
Hey, I'll look into that funding, boys. Okay? I'll let you know what the bank manager says tomorrow.
And with anybody out there that might hear that, if anybody would like to step up and fund a studio for us, we'd be happy to have that discussion. After all the action that we have seen from the Kansas football program on the recruiting trail in the last 24 hours, we have to start with football. I'm going to bring in John Kirby. We're going to focus football early. JK, I don't even know where to start and how to begin to describe what we have witnessed over the last couple days with recruiting from Les Miles and his staff. Were you expecting anywhere near the results that we have seen in the last 48 hours with all the commitments that have been coming out of the Anderson family football complex?
Well, I would probably be a liar, Randy, if I told you I expected all of them. I'm not sure they're done either. I did expect some. I think this weekend was put in place, and I think there's some strong relationships that were built. I think this weekend was put in place thinking there was going to be some. I bet if you went behind closed doors and got the staff, they would tell you that probably rolling the dice, they'd say 6 to 7 was the max number, maybe going into the weekend, and then they even got a few more, you know, surprises. So absolutely not. I wasn't expecting this. I wasn't expecting 18 being the number. I wasn't expecting a top 20 class, and I get all that stuff will change when some other programs start picking up some commitments. But when you're sitting here at late June and Kansas is ranked in the top 20 in football, I really don't think anybody was expecting that.
No question. No question about it. I know being there yesterday and watching the coaches running around during the camp, you could tell the amount of energy and just everything that was going on. Let's start with the commitments that we know about. Just take us through the recruits who announced their verbal this weekend. And I know you've had a chance to talk with most of them. Just kind of tell us about what you've heard from them and what we can expect at this point.
You know, let's start off with the latest known commitment, and Keenan Caldwell, who's a 6'2", 305-pound defensive tackle out of Oak Grove, Louisiana. You know, he was an unofficial visitor, so I really thought that he would come up. The word was he would take his unofficial visit and then probably come back for an official visit later in the year. But, you know, it was big. His family was with him. I had a chance to talk to him last night. And the thing you like about this one is, you know, this is a guy with some pretty good offers on the table. And, yes. And at a position that, hey, listen, there's one thing when you listen to the Kansas fans, it's been offensive line and defensive line. And people always want to know, the football recruiting junkies always want to know about defensive tackles. Well, this is a defensive tackle, and I thought this one maybe came out of left field. Because like I said, on an unofficial visit, I wasn't sure that he would jump in. The thing that I like hearing from him, talking to him last night, was he said his parents were on board. And after he had a chance to talk to his parents, they were the ones that said, hey, let's do this. Let's make that commitment. We loved our visit. He came up on Friday. You know, they got to see everything. This wasn't even an official visit. So I think that, you know, right there shows just with some of the relationships and some of the energy these recruits and the families are seeing on their visits. You know, staying along the defensive line, I'll move into Caleb Taylor, who's got a couple interesting things going on. Number one, you know, he's from St. Louis. He's another guy that I thought was going to take some visits as well, other than just Kansas. But he gave the Jayhawks his commitment. Good relationship with DJ Elliott, who's been recruiting the St. Louis area. And also, he talked highly of Quan Drake, having a chance to, you know, spend 2 days around what would be his future position coach. And maybe the biggest news that Taylor gave us is moving into Staley. I know, that's a pretty big addition for a program that seems to turn them out quite often. So I'm sure there's some area coaches in Kansas City finding out that they're about ready to add Caleb Taylor, and they're looking down that schedule realizing Staley just got a little bit tougher. But, you know, Caleb Taylor's another good addition. And again, somebody that could have taken more visits. And one thing he talked about is the move to Staley made KU even more attractive, because he talked about only being 40 minutes from home. So I really think that helped a lot.
You know, one of the things I want to add real quick, I know you talked about Keenan Caldwell first. That's a young man that I walked past several times yesterday. And I'll tell you, I didn't think he was a recruit. I thought he was, you know, a coach that was visiting from somewhere. That is a grown man. He is a huge, imposing individual that I swore he does not look anything like a kid up close. And when I saw that, when I saw it on the Twitter feed that he had committed and looked at his picture, I realized who had been that I passed him three different times on the field yesterday and had no idea who he was. He is a mountain of a young man.
Well, when you're 6'2", 305, you usually don't look like you're 17 years old.
Okay, granted. I'll give you that. I will give you that.
Well, hey, let's move it on. I'm going to forget as I get older here, man. I don't remember stuff like I used to. So staying on the defensive side, Jacoby Bryant, and you talk about maybe the surprise of the weekend. I think Jacoby Bryant was probably that guy. I mean, he's got SEC offers all over the place, ACC offers. Boy, he's what you look for in a corner. He's 6'1", but, you know, 180, tall, rangy guy. Film is tremendous. He can play man. He can play zone. Does a great job. When you watch him on film, does a great job of diagnosing, baiting quarterbacks into throwing into his area. A little bit like Aqib Talib used to do. Obviously, he's got a few Pro Bowls to go before we can talk about mentioning him with Talib. But he's got the build Talib had, and Talib used to bait those quarterbacks. I can't tell you how many times I went back and watched KU film and saw him just know where that ball was going. And when you watch Brian on film, especially in some of the zone coverages, he does a great job of reading. Moving over to the offensive side from the weekend, Malik Johnson, wide receiver from the Woodlands, who I expect to have on here on the studio line here in just a bit. Great relationship with wide receivers coach Emmett Jones. Had a chance to talk with Malik, and you know, it was interesting. He told me going into the weekend that he wouldn't decide likely until next week. He wanted to announce his decision next week, but I think he was so sold on KU, and it was a slam dunk. That's where he was going. He just went ahead and got it out of the way while he was on campus. And Randy, he's a little different than what we've seen here lately, because you look down the wide receivers and the tight ends that Kansas has gotten so far, and you got a lot of tall guys. You got a lot of big targets. So Malik Johnson's that one guy who gives you some shiftiness, great change of direction, good return man. When you watch him, he lines up in split back. He lines up in slot. They run, you know, jet sweeps with him. So he's a dynamic guy. I was going to put this in my commitment analysis. He reminds me a little bit of Velton Gardner, the KU signee who's now on campus. And he, you know, he's dynamic with the ball in his hand. They're very similar. Now, Gardner lined up last year on film a lot as a quarterback, and Malik Johnson's more of a slot, just get the ball in his hands type guy. But Kansas fans will really like watching him because he is explosive. And then rounding it out, you know, again, back to this O-line, D-line, three offensive linemen. And I think this is probably, of the group, the biggest improvement in the class that they could have made. I mean, Garrett Jones, an offensive lineman from Michigan, you know, Les Miles talks about that 500-mile radius that he wants to recruit. And obviously there's some guys they got here outside that 500-mile radius, and it's connections and it's relationships. And when you look at Garrett Jones, Luke Meadows, the offensive line coach, came from Eastern Michigan. So he knew all about Garrett Jones when he was there. Kept him in that little black book when he left. And then when he got to Kansas, he stayed in touch with them, and they offered him. So, you know, those are the little things that really help a program sometimes, are those connections. And when you still talk about connections and staying with that theme, then you got Tommy Brand out of Minnesota. It's a connection game again. It's a relationship game, because Luke Meadows recruited Tommy Brandt's offensive line coach at his high school when he was at South Dakota. So,
oh wow!
So Tommy Brandt's offensive line coach tells Luke Meadows, "Hey, I got a guy. He can play for you. This guy can play in the Big 12." Well, there's a trust factor there. Number one, Luke Meadows has got to trust that this guy he trusts his opinion that he can play at the Big 12 level, and at the same time, Tommy Brandt's coach has to believe that Luke Meadows is a good guy and will take care of his offensive linemen. So there was that, you know, there was that in there too. And Tommy Brandt was a great interview. Hoping to get him on the studio line here in just a bit too. But you know, he comes from an all military boys school. When I talked to him, he said all they do is go traps, power, ISO. He said they just run the football. And that's what Luke Meadows liked about him on film, is he'll line up and can play some smash mouth. Although he's not a big bruising guy, he'll get there. He's still a tough, blue-collar, knock-you-on-the-ground guy. And he's a guy that I think could easily be, you know, 6'4", 290 pounds. Because right now he's probably around 265, 270, and he can add some weight. And then the last offensive lineman, which takes him to four total offensive linemen in the class, is Nick Martinez out of California. You know, he was a guy a little bit off the beaten path there. I know Jeff Hiklinski, the recruiting coordinator, first went out and saw him, because, you know, Hiklinski used to be out at San Diego State, so he's got some contacts out in California. And Martinez comes from Servite High School, which is in Anaheim there, and they are highly recruited. They're a successful program. So, you know, Jeff Hiklinski had some ties there, and he went out and liked them. And the one thing I like about what Kansas is doing, they're finding quality kids that are, you know, they hold other offers. You know, Martinez just got an offer from Arizona State in the Pac-12, but they're also finding some guys who are realistic targets that, you know, they think, hey, we like this kid. We think we can get him from California. Now, if you're out there chasing some guy with, you know, USC or Washington or Oregon, you know you're going to be in a dogfight. You got to figure out, is that worth my time doing that? So those are the main guys from the weekend that we know of so far, and it'll be interesting just to kind of follow, you know, what comes after that.
Speaking of what comes after that, just here in the last 10 minutes, they've gotten another commitment, Kirby. Juan Jarrett, a three-star linebacker from Princeton, committed just here in the last few minutes, and I love the comments. It echoes some of the stuff that you've shared with us from other players that visited this weekend. It was a great experience. He said, I really felt like it was the place for me and loved everything about the program. He put up a picture. His whole family was with him, and you can tell that he is just ecstatic. Tell us a little bit about Juan Jarrett.
Yeah, I'm reading it now. It's just breaking as we're doing the podcast, and I'll definitely reach back out to Juan. He and I have communicated here in the last week. You know, he is I don't want to say undersized, because I hear he is a good-looking physical kid, about 6'2", buck 95, and can definitely carry more weight. And again, he plays at a strong program. When I watched him on film last week from his outside linebacker spot, he was really good at reading and reacting. Came on a lot of blitz, and I'll tell you what he does. His backside pursuit is tremendous. If you go watch his film, he chases guys down you know, horizontally on the line of scrimmage. And that's probably the biggest thing that stood out to me is his first couple steps and his ability to run people down. So, and again, there's another Jeff Huklinski guy, you know, with his ties being all over the place. You know, he's been in Michigan, he's been in Indiana, he's been in California. You know, he's been in a lot of places. So, you know, what Kansas has done with Huklinski is kind of unique because everybody has their recruiting areas and they focus on those. And then it seems like Huklinski doesn't really have a set area. He kind of goes off that beaten path. I mean, he's been in Ohio, he's been in Michigan, he's been in California, you know, he's been in the northeastern part. So Juan Jarrett is another one that Huklinski found, brings it back to the position guys, brings it back to the defensive coordinator, and they like what they see and they offer and take it from there. So, hey, there you go. As we're talking here, we're breaking some news on the podcast.
That's the first time that we've ever had that happen, where literally there was a commitment while we were recording. Now, I know there are still more visitors that are out there that we're waiting to hear their reaction and kind of see if they might be willing to pull the trigger this weekend. Do you expect any more news at this point? And if so, you know, break down a little bit about who you think is still available and who is a realistic bet that they could still get into the fold here over the next couple days.
Well, you got left from the visits, and you know, some of these guys you're probably going to have to wait on. Some of them, you know, may be ready to go, but they may want to do it at their time. So I got Tywan Berryhill. You know, he's a three-star linebacker from Louisiana. I've got a good, strong feeling about him. I really think he's a possibility to get. He's a quiet kid, doesn't do many interviews, stays to himself, but I feel good. I feel good. I've already forecasted him on the website to be a Jayhawk. I think I'm hitting it 92%. Missed on Keith Miller because he flipped. That hurt my percentage. Hey, every now and then you get a curveball when you're waiting for a fastball, and Keith Miller was my curveball. So Lawrence Arnold, another guy that I feel good about. Matter of fact, I forecasted him to KU. Now, again, we may have to wait on this. I mean, you know, he's going to do things the way he wants, and he may end up taking another visit or two. But I just think Emmett Jones does such a great job with his receivers, especially those guys down in Texas. I like Lawrence Arnold. I like his chances to end up a Jayhawk. And then you've got Itavian Brown, four-star linebacker out of St. Louis.
Yes.
His coach is great, man. I talked to him. What a character. And
I got to meet Coach Reed yesterday, actually.
Oh, did you? He is awesome. He's fun to talk to.
He's a good dude. Love
he's
that
a character.
Guy.
He told me. He just said he really liked the camp, that when they went to the team camp, he liked Clint Bowen, he liked DJ Elliott, he loved Les Miles. He said the camp was very organized, and being on campus for team camp, he said that's when they decided to come back for an official visit. Now, again, he's going to be a guy they're going to have to fight on. There's no way to call that and make a prediction on that one right now. And the last one, I believe he's just leaving campus as we're doing this podcast, is Noah Arends, who's a high three-star defensive end from Webster Groves. And again, I think he's like Brown. He's pretty tough to read and figure out what he's doing.
Well, and both of those kids are going to be hard pulls out of the state of Missouri, because you know Mizzou is on both of them, which means that with the Tigers being the SEC, there are other SEC programs that are looking at them. The Big Ten schools are recruiting, the Big 12. I mean, that's really become – St. Louis has become a battleground recruiting area for a lot of programs. And if Kansas was able to pull two kids out of there, when was the last time that happened? I mean, you've been covering KU football recruiting for 21 years, and that, in my opinion at least, makes you the expert on the subject. Have you ever seen them land multiple kids potentially out of the St. Louis area? And overall, have you seen anything like we've witnessed with the early recruiting from Les Miles and his staff?
Well, on the St. Louis area, I think some of that goes back to, you know, Mangino and those guys hit Missouri in that area. And then before that, you had Glenn Mason. You know, they always did a great job with guys in St. Louis. So, it's been that time. But, you know, they're making it a priority with Miles. You know, DJ Elliott's in there. Clint Bowen's been going in there. So the one thing that you see with Kansas is, number one, you're going with a lot of high school guys. And number two, there's accountability. You know, I think Les Miles has told these guys, hey, in your areas, the guys we've identified that are on our recruiting board, you need to be on them, and you need to be on them hard, and it's your responsibility. And when you've got somebody like that leading your program, you know, it makes everybody accountable. In terms of, have I seen anything like this in my 21 years? No, I haven't seen a weekend like this, and I've never seen a Kansas staff start this fast. You got a couple things in play. Number one, I'm not dogging any staff from the past at all, because everybody had their, you know, everybody had their ways they did things. Some guys went JUCO, some guys went transfers. You know, Mangino's staff, they always did a great job finding a lot of kids in November, December, and January, but recruiting is sped up. So the reason that you're seeing Kansas with some success is the NCAA allowing summer visits now. So, you know, Randy, I know you've done this a while too with a lot of these blogs and guys starting up their own websites. You know, people that aren't credentialed media or they don't belong to a network, you know, they've kind of, I don't want to say they've become pests, but it's changed recruiting, because now a lot of these kids, they don't always want to get back to people, and they don't want to have to answer every text or do every interview they're asked of, because they're getting hit with so many directions. And the one thing that I've heard, you know, and this is a topic that we've gotten in on our message board a little bit, is so many kids want to decide early now. And it's almost like, I want to get it done to get it done. So, you know, the recruiting goes dead here. Starting today, recruiting goes dead till about the last week of July, somewhere in there. It opens up for about a week, and then it goes dead again the whole month of August. And the reason they do that is high schools start their fall camps in August, college coaches start their fall camps in August, and they just want everybody to be able to focus on their team and football. So really, we're about ready to go dead for the whole summer. So you got a lot of recruits that have said, I want to get my decision out of the way. Let's get it done. I want to make my, I don't want to be bothered. I don't want to have to get text and phone calls. I want to focus on my season. The concern that I have with that is these kids take 4 or 5 months away from recruiting. They pick a school, and I'm not just talking about Kansas here. I'm talking about schools all over the country. So these guys go in, they get their place in line. Then all of a sudden, in late October, November, the phone starts ringing. And these kids have had 4 or 5 months now downtime. They haven't had to worry about a lot of recruiting. And then it starts firing up again. And then they start saying, "Yeah, maybe I'll listen to this coach. Maybe I'll hear what this guy has to say." You know, they've had that break. Everything's fresh. And then all of a sudden, maybe I'll take that visit. You know, maybe I'll look into what this guy's saying. I'll take his call again. So, you know, the Kansas coaches, phase one is done. Okay, they are almost close to full right now with their recruiting in terms of commitments on paper. Now, phase two is going to be, let's get these guys, let's keep them. So it's almost just as much work keeping them as it is getting them committed. So I think that's what we're entering into now. And it's going to be interesting to watch to see, you know, if there's any kids that waffle, are there kids any flip? And if there are going to be some of those, I can promise you, Miles and those guys will have a board. They'll have it set up, and they'll be lined up 5 to 10 deep on that board, and you're not going to catch them off guard.
You know, it's interesting you talk about the decommitment thing. Over the last week, I've talked to a handful of college football coaches, and all of them made the point about how, one of them even used the word stupid for how commitment season has become with the early recruiting window and everything, and just how it's all changed. And we actually kind of laughed comparing college football recruiting and verbal commitments to dating in middle school. Now follow me here for a minute. We all know dating in middle school, not really anything gets accomplished. It's more about just attaching your name to a girl you like until something better comes along. And I think that's kind of where we are with verbal commitments, but you get the impression with this staff and the comments that we're hearing from some of these kids that these guys are serious. Not talking about the coaches, they are obviously, but the kids, that the impression they've made seems to be the kind of thing that could endure. And I'm actually pretty optimistic about their chances to hold on to most of these commitments. I mean, what do you think the biggest challenge this staff will face? I mean, is it just, like you said, kind of the lag, the time off, the fact that when recruiting kind of fires up again after the dead periods, that it's, oh, you know, hey, it's been a while since I've talked to somebody, I'm willing to take his call this time? Or could it be, you know, that they're looking for results on the field? I mean, what do you see are the challenges really going to be for this staff to keep these kids in the fold?
Well, the first thing you would think is just the relationship and building that. But they've already done that. I mean, they spent a lot of time January through June to get these kids, build their relationship, convince them to come on the official visit, and then get them to commit. Because you don't do that without a relationship. So I think the biggest hurdle maybe really for this staff is come, you know, kick off of the season. What's going to happen is, you know, you hope that there's, you know, some type of, look, you can go back to Mangino, you can go back to Mason. In some of their early years, they might have taken some lumps, but there were also some signs in those times under those regimes that you said, they're getting better. I mean, there were some four-win teams Mangino had that you left the stadium going, Kansas football's coming. I mean, they are coming on. Glenn Mason, some of those 1990, 1991 teams, I remember sitting in the stadium, and they'd get beat. But you left there, and you're thinking, hey, that other team, they were in a dogfight. Because, you know, Mason's team would fight you, and they'd hit you. And you may not beat them, but you left the field knowing that. And I think the biggest thing is there's got to be something come September tangible for them to sell people on that, hey, listen, we didn't win, but we were competitive in this game, or hey, we ended up finding a way to win this game, and hey, we had a lot of young kids playing, or we had guys that we know are going to be back in the program that we're going to be able to build on. I think the next step now is what does the season bring, because that might be the biggest thing that an opposing coach may be able to sell against Kansas. But, you know, so far this staff has already taken care of a lot of those challenges.
Now, with all the commitment news, it's almost, we wouldn't let it get lost in the shuffle, but I think maybe some of the fans that weren't necessarily aware of it, there were camps that staff has hosted this month, including yesterday. There was a one-day offensive in defensive lineman camp, as well as a invitational 7-on-7 tournament at the Anderson Family Complex in the indoor facility and practice fields there around Memorial Stadium. It's been a busy weekend with close to, I mean, been a busy camp season, really. I mean, you're talking maybe 1,000 kids that have been on campus for football-related activities from high schools all throughout the region. I mean, I don't know if people realize just what goes into that kind of schedule and the kind of work that this staff is putting in right now.
Well, I can't imagine being a KU coach or on staff, one of the administrative guys, one of the on-campus recruiting people, going through. See, a lot of these recruits showed up on Thursday, so they left Saturday. So if you can imagine all these kids going down to eat breakfast and you're trying to shuffle the recruits who are on their official visits, you're trying to get them set up and get them on the road so they can catch their flights. And at the same time, you got 750 people coming in for your football camps. I mean, that's like two worlds colliding at once that you almost can't manage. You know, I sit here and think how hard I worked yesterday talking to all the recruits and staying up on the news and still trying to do that today. And I'm sitting here going, I'm on my fourth cup of coffee. God, those Kansas coaches, they must be on about their fourth pot each to get through the day, because, I mean, that had to have been hectic for them to be able to manage all that. And I think it just goes to show you, you know, how structured and how organized they've been. And a lot of that goes back to Jeff Long and Doug Girard for going in and helping build a staff and bringing in more people and having the resources to do that.
Yes, I think you're exactly right. When you talk about the work that Long and Girard did from an infrastructure standpoint, and when I say infrastructure, I'm not talking facilities. I mean, the facilities are awesome, obviously, and the indoor has given them a whole new place where they can hold these kind of things. But just the staff to be able to track kids and constantly be evaluating. I mean, I've heard about the recruiting meetings that Les Miles holds that start, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, and they don't leave the meeting room until 2, and you know, guys are hungry. They haven't eaten anything all day. They're completely out of coffee, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, that we literally went over every guy, watched every piece of film, went all the way down the board, and we're going to do it with a whole new run of kids the following day." They are, they are exhaustive in their approach to recruiting right now. And, you know, we saw it yesterday. I was down there covering the 7-on-7 tournament and the offensive line, defensive line camp. They offered a wide receiver from Blue Valley High School out your way, 2021 kid in Dorian Stevens, who is a really good-looking receiver that put on a show, making all kinds of athletic catches yesterday. I got some really great video that I'm putting together right now that I'm excited to share that shows just some of his athleticism. He's a kid that I got to see a lot, well, some during the winter and the spring with Epic 7. His dad and his brother both played in the NFL, so you know they know a little bit about football. And what it takes to compete at the highest level. He only had a Kansas State offer until the weekend. I interviewed him before he left yesterday on camera. We'll have that coming up, guys, too. And you could tell he's very early in the recruiting process, obviously. I mean, the kid has not played much varsity football yet, even at Blue Valley. And he has, the people that have seen him, though, have been extremely impressed with the way that he catches the football. He's a guy that I don't think he expected another offer at this point. And, you know, obviously he's a year away, but still, for them to have an event like that, have local kids come in and be able to offer a local kid, because he was such a standout on their field. And in my opinion, he was the best player there yesterday from the skill position kids. That just goes to show the job that this recruiting staff and the coaching staff is doing to evaluate and find guys, as well as, you know, the continued commitment that you and I have talked about repeatedly, that Les Miles made from the first day he got here, and that was that they were going to recruit local kids, and Lord knows they are doing it. They are putting in the due diligence, not just in Kansas City, but in the state of Kansas, to make sure that every local kid knows about Kansas football.
Yeah, they've done a great job locally, and I've actually had high school coaches who've, you know, kind of gotten on me over the years that says, hey, you know, Kansas needs to recruit more locally or this and that. And you know, and there's still a perception out there, Randy, that they can do better. And I think that's because a lot of these local kids aren't picking them, okay? But that doesn't mean they aren't offering and they're trying, because they are. And I think you've already seen an uptick in some local commitments. And you know, I'm not sure they're done getting local commitments either. But I think right now, when you look around the city and you look around the state, you are starting to see more people, that they're seeing more Kansas coaches and they're seeing more offers. You know, and we talked about the results on the field. I think that might be one of the biggest turning points for local kids, is just to see, you know, some type of progress. And that might be the one that helps them turn the corner. Hey, speaking of offensive, defensive line, the camp that was yesterday, something that hasn't been talked about, mentioned on any message boards or anything. They offered a 2021 offensive lineman named Devon Manuel out of Louisiana. So yeah, I'm going to be getting in touch with him. So, you know, there's another one that just from these camps, they were able to take some of those, you know, evaluations that you get those kids up close and extend an offer. And one little piece of news, not the news that a lot of fans wanted to hear, but I think that with some of the commitments, it makes it easier. But hearing Johnny Wilson to Iowa State. So I don't. I don't know if I believe that's just getting out right now, but that's also coming out here on the podcast.
Alan, and I know I've made my opinion on Johnny clear. He's been one of my favorite players to watch up close in Kansas City over the last few years. Seeing him in camp settings and everything, he is a physically explosive kid that is one of the most intense high school kids that I have ever been around. And was really hopeful to see him in Crimson and Blue. But he's a kid that now they're going to have to face. And he's going to be a tough one for Iowa State, a program that has really built some good recruiting momentum in Kansas City with the work of Nathan Shieldhouse. Coach Nate's done a really good job for Iowa State. I know nobody wants to hear that on a Kansas podcast, but like you say, I mean, it's with the haul they've had this weekend, this staff that Les Miles and his assistants have put together, I think it makes that one's a little bit easier to swallow. All right, now that we've talked a little bit about all the action over the course of the weekend, we're going to pick up the studio line where John Kirby has some special guests that are going to join us and talk about their decision to join the Jayhawks with offensive lineman Tommy Brandt and dynamic wide receiver Malik Johnson to find out exactly why they chose KU.
We have our first special guest on the line, Tommy Brandt, offensive lineman from Minnesota, who gave his verbal commitment to the Jayhawks this weekend. Tommy, how you doing?
I'm wonderful. Can't be better.
Have you finally got back and got some rest?
Yes. I got back yesterday, probably around 3. And, yeah, I got to go see all my family and talk to them about what happened down in Kansas this weekend.
Well, kind of tell us what happened. Just break down the visit and talk about, you know, giving the Jayhawks your verbal commitment and how you came to that decision.
Okay. So I'd say, when I took the junior day in January, I kind of felt it in my gut at from that day that I was there until when I landed this weekend. It was just, I always had it in the back of my head, in my gut. And I think, a big part about it for me was when they showed us this video at the beginning of the official visit. They took us straight to the team meeting room and played this video where they had guys like Chris Harris, Aqib Talib, a bunch of those guys in the NFL kind of talked about what it was like to be coached by less or just to come and play football at Kansas. And a big part about it that I actually listened to or stood out to me, Leib said, he said something, everyone else, I go to Alabama, I didn't want to go to LSU, I didn't want to go to Texas. I wanted to go to a school like Kansas where you can play against these big schools and show up and just beat the crap out of them. And that's what he said. And that just stood out to me. I thought that was pretty interesting. And, on the verbal commitment part, I just needed something to kind of not start that domino effect, I guess. And, Nick, the other offensive lineman commit, I was sitting in the recruiting suite and waiting to go talk with Coach Meadows and Coach Miles. And Nick came out and looked at me, didn't say anything. He just smiled and said, I did it. And then that kind of set everything off. And I was like, I want to do this just because I knew this was the place to be. Just because And Coach Miles, is kind of my high school coach. They're the exact same person. It's kind of funny. Coach Miles and Coach Meadows. But my coach in high school was at the U for 15 years. And his motto is hashtag old school. So it's a lot Kansas is trying to do with their new running in the Big 12 just doesn't happen. They're just going to do it just because that's old school. And we're going to run power and we're going to run counter and we're going to run ISO right up your throats. Doesn't matter if you guys have 10 guys in the box, that's what we're going to do. And it just demoralizes other teams if they put 10 guys in the box and just can't do anything about it. And it just makes me think about it. But, yeah, that's kind of how it all went down. And, I had already seen all this stuff in January. So, a couple things they showed us, I'd already seen it. But, it was just, I kind of came this time with the mindset, is this really real? what's going on here? Is this happening? And then I completely realized that, yes, it is. And the Jayhawks are coming.
That's great stuff. That's Tommy Brandt, one of the latest offensive line commitments, and we're definitely going to talk to you again in the future. And Tommy, I really appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us. We are joined now by Malik Johnson, an electric, speedy wide receiver from the Woodlands. Malik, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
You finally get home. I asked Tommy Brandt the same thing. You get a chance to get back and get some rest?
Not really, because I got back and my friends threw me a surprise commitment party.
So your weekend just kept going then, huh? It started Thursday and just kept going through Sunday.
Yes, sir.
Hey, talk about your commitment to the Jayhawks. You know, let all the fans out there know. Just, you know, what was it? At what point did you say, this is what I'm going to do it? And, you know, talk a little bit about your relationship with Emmett Jones.
Really? I had been up there, and I went up there in February. And when I came back, I saw a little bit more of the campus and how nice it was and, like, the people. I just, like, I don't know, it just felt like home. And I saw all the coaches again, Les Miles and all them. Those guys do a great job of recruiting. Coach Jones, I got to talk to him again. We're real close. I met him my sophomore year. We talked a lot about how I was fitting the offense, and Les Miles told me he really wanted me because I could be a playmaker difference on the team. And, you know, when we were walking around the campus, everything was just so much nicer, like, than the first time I came. Like, the first time was nice, but, like, I kind of saw a little bit more this time because I was on campus longer. And it was really nice, and I liked the teammates that were already on the team, Quan Hampton, Carter Stanley, the quarterback, a couple more guys. It kind of just felt at home. So the next day, well, that Friday, I woke up, and I just prayed. And that whole day, it just felt like home. And I was like, okay, I'm going to commit. I just kept telling myself, okay, I'm going to commit tonight. I'm going to commit tonight. So I was going to wait till next week, but I just couldn't wait. It was meant to be.
You and I talked about this when we spoke after you committed. You talked about the scene, how you had the microphone and you committed in front of all of the recruits and maybe kind of got the whole commitment thing going for the weekend.
Yes, sir.
Take me back through that scene for everybody to hear.
It was just a special time, and I talked to Coach Jones, and I just told him it was time, and he gathered all the coaches, and nobody really expected it because we were all just trying on the uniforms and stuff. So they introduced me, gave the microphone, and everybody was in there, all the recruits. And when I announced, and I just thanked the coaches and the KU family, everybody for everything. And once I said commit, you know, everybody went crazy. And then other commits started, like, I mean, other recruits started just like, dang, like, yeah, I kind of want to commit too. And it just kept going throughout that, the rest of the weekend. It just kept going. And then I think we ended up with like 9 more commits, something like that. We had a lot of commits.
Well, you're going to go down in this crazy weekend, maybe as the guy who got everything started. And I want to tell you, I really appreciate you coming on here and sharing your story with the Kansas fans. And we look forward to talking to you again.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you.
All right, Malik, take care.
That was a ton of great information from John Kirby on the latest with football recruiting. There's so much to comb through with, and there's so much happening with Les Miles and his staff right now. We will have another podcast soon to again, dig into just what we're seeing from this new coaching staff and start looking ahead finally to the start of the 2019-2020 football season. Now let's turn to the hardwood and bring in my man, Shea Wildebor. Shea, this has been maybe the craziest offseason for the Kansas men basketball program that anyone can remember. Let's start off with the part of who is returning from last season's roster. How big was it for Bill Self to get the news that Udoka Azubuike, Silvio De Souza, and Devon Dotson will all return for this season. Take me through what was like covering all those announcements really as they happened.
Yeah, you know, for me, Randy, here's the thing. Like, as I think all leaders, and I speak that specifically talking about the message board, I try not to panic, because you panic and then people on the board panic and then the questions start to go and there's really no answers that can be given right away. So on the inside, my thought was, oh my God, what are they going to do? But then as I began to kind of let things play out and kind of watch how things unfolded, here was my first thought. Where was Udoka Azubuike going to go? Clearly, he couldn't work out with his wrist injury. He didn't have really a lot of options. So my thought was that he would, after thinking about it for a while and kind of playing all the scenarios out, he could have gone overseas. But again, he was absolutely limited in what he could do, which was basically nothing. So really, what were his options? Well, his biggest option was to come back. Then, so once I kind of understood that, I moved to Silvio, and my thought was, are the people involved going to make the right decision? And they absolutely made the right decision. I haven't spent a lot of time on the message boards talking about this, and I should. He absolutely deserved to play basketball last year, and he absolutely deserves to play basketball this year. He did absolutely nothing wrong. And if anything, I will say this. How do I know this? Because he didn't bolt. He didn't leave. From the very beginning, he said, I've done nothing wrong. And he didn't. I think it's a shame that he was punished for something that somebody close to him did. You know, that's a discussion for another day. So then when I realized that was going to play itself out, I kind of turned to Devon. And my thought was all along, at least for him, that this was an information-seeking quest. There was no doubt in my mind that unless he was guaranteed the opportunity to be a first-round pick, to earn some guaranteed money, that he was going to come back. So for me, it was kind of in phases. You know, it started with Azubuike really making the decision of either he could come back and have an amazing senior season, hopefully he can stay healthy, or, you know, there weren't a lot of options for him to pursue after that. Then it went from, you know, the people in charge of DeSouza making the right call and then Dotson. So it was a wild ride, man, because at one point I wondered, really, when it all kind of started, when all the dominoes started to, before all the dominoes started to fall, you wondered what was going to happen. And there was a point there where I envisioned life at Kansas without those three, and that certainly would have not been good. Now, did I anticipate all three coming back right away? No, I didn't. You know, I thought that at least one or two would be gone, most likely Dotson and Azubuike. But, you know, it played out the way it was supposed to, and you look at it now, and this team is going to be – I mean, I know we'll talk ahead in a little bit about this, but this team is going to be scary good next year.
Talk about scary good. Let's talk about the newcomers that we are expecting on campus and that are already on campus for that matter. Take us through the recruits and transfers that are coming in, new for this coming season, and give us your take on who you think might be able to contribute most out of that new group.
Obviously you have Jalen Wilson, the newest member of the class, was committed and signed with Michigan. John Beilein leaves. He opens things back up, takes a couple visits. Obviously, I think he's the guy that will have the biggest impact as far as the newcomers go. Then, you know, you look at an Isaiah Moss, who transfers in from Iowa after committing to Arkansas. They added going into the season when I knew that the big three were coming back that we just talked about. Going into the season, you knew Kansas had to find some guys that could shoot the ball, and they've got two guys without question that can do that, in Isaiah Moss and Jalen. So those are two huge additions. And beyond that, Randy, and I'm not avoiding the question, I don't know. You know what? I really don't. I mean, I think at some point, Isaac McBride's going to be a huge player for this team, and the same can be said about Christian Braun. During it's scrimmages, and you guys, here's the deal with this. We've all seen it. We saw Jeremy Case explode for like 9 threes a game during the summer scrimmages. Expectations were off expectations were off the roof. And then, you know, things don't always play out like that. You guys, I saw Christian Braun shoot the heck out of the basketball at the alumni scrimmages. I mean, he's got such a smooth stroke. He's got this quiet kind of Well, yeah, quiet assassin about him. I mean, he doesn't say a lot, doesn't have a lot of facial expressions, doesn't show a lot of emotion, but the cat can ball. I mean, he kind of reminds me of a I'll never forget Tyrell Reed. Kind of midway through his career, Kansas was playing a game at Nebraska, and Tyrell Reed was just drilling three after three. And for the first time ever, I saw some emotion out of him when he was John with the Nebraska fans. I mean, just going back and forth. That's what I see kind of out of Christian Braun early. I mean, he's a guy that can hit shots. The question is will they need him or will they redshirt? You know, I think that's a question, too, now that can be posed about Mitch Lightfoot. I mean, who is going to redshirt out of this group? Because all of a sudden, you went from 2 months ago to a team that might need some bodies, now to a team that has a whole lot of bodies. Again, Tristan Inaruna, he's a guy, too, that can be a stretch four. You know, a guy that can give you some buckets down low, can step outside. So, Randy, I'm seriously conflicted. Here's what I know. Let me do it this way. I know that Udoka Azubuike is going to be a baller for Kansas. I know that Silvio De Sousa is going to be a baller for Kansas. Devon Dotson is going to play a lot of minutes. Is going to be a baller. Marcus Garrett is a guy that's going to be a baller. David McCormick is going to have a major role for this team. A guy really last year that started. After Doak went down. And, you know, after that, I don't know what to tell you. Obviously, Ochai Agbaji is going to be a baller. And then you have to look at, you know, is Mitch Lightfoot going to redshirt? Will any of these other guys redshirt? So I expect, of the new guys, you know, I have high expectations for Jalen, you know, high expectations for Isaiah Moss. Now, I don't know if Isaiah is going to come in and play, you know, 28 minutes a game, but I think he's going to be a guy that's going to come in, probably play a role off the bench and hit some big shots for this squad. After that, all bets are off. At this point, I really don't know. I don't know how it's going to all play out. I do anticipate some guys redshirting because there just aren't enough minutes for all these guys. I mean, you've got really a squad for the first time in, you know, a year or two where Bill Self has a ton of options. He can pull one off the bench right after the other. So it's going to be interesting to see how he manages this roster moving forward.
More fun questions for you, Shay. I've seen you post on the message board that the program does have a scholarship available. What do you think Coach Self is going to do with that?
I think he'll hold it for now. I do. There were some guys they were looking at early on, some bigs. But when you added the Jalen, you know, you added the Isaiah, I don't think there's a rush to add anybody unless you know that you can get somebody automatically right now today that can help you. Like, let's say I'm from Sunrise Christian Academy and Nafale Dante decides to reclassify. And you guys, here's a name that has been kind of talked about off and on. And to be honest with you, I don't see it happening, but you have a Kyrie Walker. A talented guard of the 2020 class that has talked about reclassifying. Right now, unless you can bring in a stand-up kid that can help you immediately, I save it. I do maybe award one of the walk-ons, but I don't see the staff doing anything unless they can add somebody without question that's going to make this team better. And right now, there's nobody in the 2019 class that's going to make this team better. The guy that could have or will make this team better is Jalen Wilson, and he's obviously on campus now, participating in summer school, and you know he's set on his spot. And So I think they'll hold it or award one of the walk-ons before doing anything else unless somebody decides to reclassify late.
Okay, Shay, so what you've basically told us is that for the most part, the big picture is really kind of set.
Correct.
As for all intents and purposes, as we start to move towards the start of the season. With that in mind, then, how do you see this team shaping up, at least on paper? And is this the type of roster that you think can break us out of the drought of Big 12 titles that, you know, this 1 year run of not winning the league championship out of the last 16 years. Do you think that this is the kind of team that can get back to that level for Bill Self and the Jayhawks?
The drought after 14 years, it's the drought. I do. I'm giving you a hard time, but yeah, I do. Randy, last year, the expectations couldn't have been any higher. And things finally caught up to Kansas. What was expected last year is what I expect to happen to this year. Let me make sure I'm doing this right, Randy. On paper, you've got Marcus Garrett, Devon Dotson, Christian Braun, Isaiah Moss, Jalen Wilson, Tristan Inaruna, Silvio De Sousa, Ochai Agbaji, David McCormick, Udoka Azubuike, Mitch Lightfoot, and Isaac McBride as scholarship players. That's before anybody redshirts. Yo, that is a loaded squad.
That's a lot of dudes right there, too.
Dudes, yeah, absolutely. And dudes that can play. I mean, obviously, they're not McDonald's All-Americans. But here's the thing, too, Randy, that I thought about. A lot of people were upset over the loss of Matthew Hurt, Jeremiah Robinson Earl, Cassius Stanley, and obviously so. But I look at the cats that this team has now, and all those guys that I just mentioned, the Hurts and the Robinson Earls, are one-year-and-done guys. The thing that I like about this team is you've got guys that are potentially program difference makers over time. And when you add what Kansas has coming back, and you add to the mix what they have now, I absolutely love this team. I do, because here's the thing. I don't know if you guys remember, probably at the turn of the decade, when Bill Self and Kansas matched up against, or when Roy Williams and Kansas matched up against Bill Self and Illinois. And there was a year, I know they split in the tournament, but there was a year when Illinois just brought body after body off the bench and pounded Kansas. I remember Nick Collison absolutely getting pounded, struggled from the line. And when you look at last year's team, Bill Self really had no options. I mean, his hands were dealt, and there was nothing he can do. You look at this year, and he can put matchup after matchup after matchup on the court. He can go big, he can go small, he can go big and small. There's absolutely nothing that he can't do, and that's when I think he's most dangerous. You know, if guys are struggling, he can pull them. You know, if guys are playing well, he can keep them on the court, not have to worry about an influx of minutes. So I'm not telling you right now to go out and get your Final Four tickets right away. But if Kansas isn't one of the last four teams standing at the end of the season, I'll be surprised. I will. I just think that there's too much talent. And I can tell you this, you guys. Last year, if the fans are upset with how the season ended, I can't even begin to tell you how frustrated Bill was. I mean, you know, you think you're going to have Silvio, you don't. You think you're going to have Doak, you don't. Obviously, Quentin Grimes was, listen, good kid, good family. It just didn't work out here, so you take that away. I mean, you guys, he had three key guys he thought he was going to have that were non-existent. I mean, what, Doak played 9 games, Silvio didn't play any, and what, Quentin had maybe a handful of games where he was really the Quentin everybody expected. So this year, I mean, he's loaded. He's got the best point guard, and I'm going to say this again, the best point guard in college basketball, in my opinion, the best big man in college basketball, and a big man that no other team can emulate. Really, I mean, is there another Udoka Azubuike anywhere, even anywhere close? No. Not in my estimation. You've got a power forward in Silvio DeSouza that I expect is going to be jump out of the gym good. I mean, this is a guy that has paid his dues, hasn't said a word, has patiently waited to play, and now he's been given the clear. Not only that, I mean, you think about it. He got here from Florida or from IMG off a plane, had to sit out games. I can't remember. He missed, the first 5 or 6 games he was supposed to play in. Made his debut against Kansas State, I think, in the here in Allen Fieldhouse. Sat out all of last year, and now he's finally in a position where the first time at Kansas, he knows when he steps on the court he's going to be able to play. No doubt about it. So I can't even begin to imagine what his preparation is like. And then you've got, you know, Ochai Agbaji, who last year had some injuries late. And I don't know if you guys have seen him lately, but I would challenge you to go look at a picture from last year and look at a picture this year. Dude doesn't even look the same. I mean, he looks like a guy that spent all season, off season in the gym, and he looks like a dude that's going to be coming ready to play. You know, Marcus Garrett's healthy. And you know, and I can promise you this, and Bill said this 2 times last week, the best defender in the Big 12 and one of the best defenders in all of college basketball. I get the 3-point shot. People would like to see that improve and all those things. To me, defense wins championships, and there's not a better defender in college basketball, in my estimation, than Marcus Garrett. So you've got all those cats coming back, and then you throw in the likes of, you know, Christian Braun, who could be a dead-eye shooter, Jalen Wilson, Tristan Inaruna, Isaiah Moss. Really, I mean, I could go on and on about how excited Kansas fans should be about this team. No doubt the team to beat in the Big 12, and no doubt one of the top 2 or 3 teams in college basketball, hands down, if everything plays out the way it should. If this team stays healthy, if everybody buys in, and, you know, the chips fall, I mean, a lot of it's luck at the end of the year, but the chips fall where they're supposed to fall, this team is going to be crazy good, and it's going to be a fun year, no doubt.
You heard it here. Shea Wildebor says don't buy your tickets, but that if the Kansas Jayhawks aren't one of the four final teams standing at the end of the upcoming college basketball season, he'll be shocked. Shay, that was a lot of information. Amazing stuff. Great job from you. Like we've said, you know, we want to make these available to Kansas fans and to Jayhawks Slant followers and subscribers on a more consistent basis. And we appreciate all the listeners that we have had. Those numbers that we had for the last 12 months have just been absolutely off the charts. And we appreciate it. We thank you. And we've, like I said, we have heard what you've said, and we plan to listen. There will be more of these available. That'll wrap up this podcast. We've had a ton of amazing information, both from Kirby and from Shay, on football and men's basketball. Be sure to check the message boards regularly. It seems like I'm sure Kirby's probably had another commitment or two from Les Miles and his program just since we've been sitting here. And be sure to follow us on the Jayhawks Land Twitter feed to find out scheduling information for our next podcast. This has been Randy Withers for Jayhawk Slant with John Kirby and Shea Wildebor. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.